This is a pre-recorded version of the WTKA Roundtable on WTKA, unsurprisingly. 9 o'clock Thursdays. It is pre-recorded, however, so if you call in, no one will answer. And for that matter, what is the difference between recorded and pre-recorded?
And we are back, folks, here on the Michigan Insider Sports Talk 1050 WTKA online at WTKA.com. Live here inside the MDN studios with the MGO Blog Roundtable. And, of course, this is the time of the show where we always start off. We go in order of seniority. And so that's why we start with, I call him the Venerable, Craig Ross. Craig, how are you doing this morning?
I'm good. I have an apology from 6 years ago.
Which is for what?
Six years ago on this show, I said the phrase, I got blisters on my fingers, was attributable to George Harrison. And someone corrected me and said it was really John Lennon. So I'm sorry. I apologize. It's just 6 years late.
And Yoko might forgive you.
Why did this come
up? It just popped in my head right now. I was thinking about dog therapists from the prior two sections ago.
And you got to blisters. How?
I don't know. I just think we need a therapist for the show. Maybe Mark Ziegler, who's a good therapist in town and was the greatest basketball player.
Speak
in
for yourself, Craig
history
Ross.
Of Medina.
You are
until
not
John
allowed to
up.
Make me laugh today.
Sorry.
Today of all days.
Sorry,
you
speak for yourself,
laugh.
Craig Ross.
All right, Brian Cook, how you doing, man?
I have no idea how to follow that.
I hear you. Yeah, there is no following. Sometimes
I
you just got to let it stand,
just,
right?
Just move on.
Ed Fang from the Power Rank. How are you doing this morning, Ed?
I'm great, Sam. I hope you're doing better there with...
I got a bag of peas
that were
frozen when I came in this morning. I ice in every break, and so we're maintaining. So, fellas, the Wolverines, they go out, they take care of business, so, 38-7?
It's hard to remember the score.
Yeah, it was 35-0. They ran a touchdown back and we scored a field goal.
So So 38-7, and really, it's a game where you want to not give the opposition hope. You want to start taking it as early as possible. And Michigan got on the board, opening kick. Giles Jackson takes it all the way back.
Yeah, and there was kind of an interest. I don't know if this is what people do a lot, but like there was a linebacker kind of pulling across the formation to like give him the crease. It looked like that was maybe something that Michigan saw in Maryland's kick coverage. And then Michael Barrett buried a dude. So like that's the third special teams play he's made this year with the fake punt. He's had two fake punts and then he buries a guy on this kickoff. He's having a good year.
Gil made a good block on there on the kickoff return also.
But like Barrett buried a dude. Good block but Barrett put a guy on the ground.
You know, it's one of those games where you know, you see Maryland on offense have some success running the football inside. They hit a few plays, but ultimately Michigan didn't let their offense score any points. They still averaged under 3 yards a carry. Offensively, it wasn't the type of rushing effort Notre Dame was. Yet I still thought we saw some promising things, some signs that they continue to add elements to their attack by the week.
Well, along those lines, I've got a question for Brian. It seemed like Michigan was very good at covering the wide part of the field, and I thought we were pretty good in pass defense. But we got gashed up the middle quite a bit, it seems like. And Seth had a good article on MGO Blog yesterday or the day before talking about the Michigan defense spilling to the outside with the defensive end crashing inside of a puller and the linebackers spilling outside. And I wonder if we were spilling a little too quickly from the middle. And I know at least in one play that seemed to be true.
Oh, you mean for the linebackers going too quickly? I mean, if that's the scheme, then the linebackers have to be prepared to go get it on the outside.
Right.
So when you're playing to spill and you're not able to cut off all the creases inside, you're going to get a bit of a gash.
And we did. So.
Yeah. So, I mean, it is a little bit of a concern because it looks like now you kind of go back and you look at the opponents Michigan's played. You know, Iowa had no interior line.
Right.
Notre Dame has a couple of guys who are very young. Michigan passed on Aaron Banks and for that. And then Kramer goes out
in the Michigan
in the middle of that game. And it kind of feels like instead of like there's this good progress being made by the defensive tackles, it kind of feels like maybe they just didn't play anyone who was particularly good. And that's the one thing that Maryland does have. They have a pair of good guards. And so those guys were able to double Michigan and kind of move out those defensive tackles.
Yeah, there was one. There was one that they hit. They cleared one for out on and got a good gash play up the middle, just a double team that moved them out of there. There were those plays in there. But, you know, I keep coming back to.
It is completely bizarre. Like, you go into this game at halftime and you're like, oh my god, they've had 12 play drives, we've been lucky to not get scored on. And then you go at the end of the game and it's like, oh, they got over 200 yards because of a garbage time again. Like, Don Brown has completely warped all your expectations.
That's a really fair point. You know, on the other hand, with 4 minutes or about 4 to 5 minutes to go in the half, we'd gained under 50 yards
and they were all on that first drive, right?
Now, part of that was that we ran a kickoff back for a touchdown, so you lost a possession there. Yeah. So some of it is that. Still, there was a certain level of unease when you look back at this game.
Well, you look at the passing game, and, you know, they got 80 yards on their top two plays. So that's about 100 yards in the passing game on 27 plays, 30% success rate overall. You know, not what you're looking for against the Maryland defense. And then on the defensive side of the ball, Sam, you mentioned the yards per carry. I like to take out the sack yards out of that. So that brings it up to 3.8 yards for Maryland. You know, they were able to be successful about 50% of those plays, half of 42 plays for Maryland. But, I mean, you can't – I'm not – so that was an issue with what you guys were talking about. But I'm not worried about that. I mean, I think the pass offense is they're still working on it.
Yeah, I think I start off with the run game, and you know this week we see them feature different things every week. This week it was the trap, and they wore them out. They wore them out with a counter trap play that was as effective as we've seen.
I mean, that to the second half, like in the first half, they go three and out.
Yeah,
was there a third one in there?
No, there was two. There was the touchdown drive and then two three and outs.
And like Michigan, it was a little bit strange because usually this is a team that Shea Patterson just whoops up on.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, he sat in the pocket. He didn't make bad decisions for the most part, but he just wasn't accurate, and that's a little unusual. Like, you saw there were those throws like behind Eubanks. Maybe Eubanks can make that catch, but still.
But it wasn't. It didn't lead him. Yeah, right. that was a bad ball.
We had 2 3-and-outs, and then we had a drive. 2 3-and-outs, and then we had the fake punt, which was almost a 3-and-out, which was a great call.
That's
what happened, and that was late in the first half, the fake punt.
And then immediately after the fake punt, they like toss it downfield to Nico Collins.
Where is that?
Why are we not doing this all the time?
Yeah.
Like, what is his success rate on those throws downfield at this point?
It's more than 50%, or at least 50%.
Well, I mean, it's good enough that it justifies the yardage gained on them.
Because he's getting PIs or a catch.
So some guy from Pro Football Focus, who's a Michigan fan, like looked it up in their database because just so baffled. He's drawn 7 PIs this year.
Right.
And that's on par with the guys who draw the most in the country. Those guys have like 180, 60 targets. Nico Collins has 47. So on like a per target basis, he's getting interfered with more than anyone in the country except Ahmad Wagner, who you might remember playing for Iowa. Basketball, who's now at Kentucky, and he has a similar kind of profile where you're like, why aren't you throwing to him? Well, Kentucky isn't throwing to him because their quarterback is now Lynn Bowden, who's basically a single wing fullback. Michigan doesn't have as good of an explanation for why Nico Collins only has 47 targets this deep into the season. So I just don't understand it. I mean, you see how it looks whenever you throw it deep to him, and to not do that on a more regular basis.
He's
not getting doubled every other time, is he? Or is he?
I mean,
that's a good question. I mean, it may be that he's just drawing so much double coverage, they're saving their shots.
I mean, there is an element of that, but also, you know, if you have a guy on a fly route down the sideline, that's tough to double.
Sure.
And that's the throw that Patterson has.
They, on that play, you know, his first, I think he was looking at the streak. They jumped the streak, and then he went to the post. Saw him earlier in the game. He went to Nico on a slant, and he went away from his primary read pre snap, to do that. So we, you know, it's just not.
But
to
also,
your point,
yeah,
it's not regular
targets
enough
in the game. Like that's
yeah, it's not. It's definitely drawing up more. Nico is another layer that they need to add. The run game has grown more than the passing game thus far. Hopefully, the other part really catches up, because the pieces in the second half that we saw, of course, pin and pull was successful, split zone was successful. Now you see this counter trap play that they come in. I think they recounted, they ran it like 14, 15 times in the game. And that's where they really started peeling off some plays, peeling off some yardage with as the game went on.
So you're talking about the...
Where they're trapping the five, and they're wrapping with the... they're pulling a guard, wrapping with the H-back leading them up through the hole.
They ran that many times, did they really?
Yeah, they did.
I mean, they ran a lot of stuff that looked like pin and pull and ended up going inside. And to me, that was just...
Looked like ISOs to me.
Well, so...
So they're trapping the five. They're letting the five go, and the guard comes around and kicks him, and then the H leads him up through the hole. So it's a trap play.
Okay.
Well, I mean, the interesting thing to me about Michigan's ground game is, so this happened on the long True Wilson run, is that they're running.
That was a pin and pull.
Right. They're running
after
pin and pull.
The orbits, right?
Well, so Maryland does not want to get edge. They're dead set on not getting edge on the pin and pull. And so you see Michigan have the second puller like read what's happening. So on that play, on Wayne, who's like, all right, well, they're outside of the tight end, so I need to come inside and go up the middle. Michigan was pretty good at having both the guard recognize it and go up and then have the running back pick through that hole. So I thought that was probably just an on-the-fly adjustment, but it's an interesting change because you have to be looking for that if you're actually going to execute it. So Michigan must have anticipated this was going to be the approach to pin and pull and made it work.
And all the backs in this game had examples where it's them and a guy and they win. And I got to single out Hassan Haskins one more time, because there was a play in there. I want to say it was a stretch play, and we don't know for sure. I'd have to ask, but it looked to me like he didn't put the H in motion like he was supposed to, because he had to come across to get the end crashing, and there's no way at least we don't think there's any way that you call that play for him to come all the way across to get that in when the back is on that side. So anyway, that guy gets a free shot at Hassan Haskins.
Yeah,
as do two other guys. He runs through three guys to get like, I don't know, 7-8 yards on the play. And this dude he's not the only one breaking tackles now, you know, getting more yards after contact. But it seems like since he was injected into the lineup, it has been infectious. He's made a huge difference.
It's interesting. Coming into the year, there were some generalized questions about running back. They lost Higgins. Evans is gone. But really, running back has been the least of the problems, to the extent there have been problems on the offense. I would say really most of the year. Except for the fumbles, right?
I feel like Charbonnet has gotten a lot better, right? I mean, he's getting more yards after first contact
all year
now.
Yeah, I mean, I remember doing that Army game.
Right. Well, he had 100 yards on 33 carries,
right,
but was like not breaking tackles.
I disagree with that. I thought there were a number of examples where he's got a guy in the hole and he's able to do that thing where he's able to shift
in that game.
Shift without losing momentum. And I feel like most of the problems with the run game have been not with the running backs, because we have done this for years as a UFR. Mm-hmm. Like I do it and I'm like, these are the cuts that I think the running backs missed, and it's always been very controversial because people are like, oh, you can't. And sometimes it's very, very clear, and sometimes it's a little bit like less clear. I haven't done that at all this year. I haven't pointed out like this guy lost yards here because he missed a cut.
Yeah, I mean, I talked to Chris Howard about this, and you know, talking to a tailback and asking him, should you get more here? And hearing him in many instances early in the season say, yeah, you got to get more
there
here.
There were a couple instances like they put Charbonnet on the edge and then the Iowa safety makes an incredible play.
Yeah, that was one. But
I mean, but that it's a different situation where it's like, all right, you're in the open field. You got to break a tackle. You got to make a play. That's a different thing than like this gap was here and you didn't see it. And I think they've had pretty good, even great vision all year.
Think about that True Wilson play, that 39-yard run. Early in the season, that's a 3-yard gain. because the end crashes so hard. And he gets him. He has arms on him. And True Wilson runs through that tackle. Those types of plays are happening so regularly now. And they weren't happening early in the season.
Well, and
across the board.
One of the reasons that they're happening is that the angle of contact is different. Like the Hassan Haskins like big run where he stiff arms the defensive end against Notre Dame. Like that guy's coming at him from the side. Mm-hmm. And that's a much easier situation to break a tackle. True Wilson, guy coming at him from the side, than if a guy is square up on him. So like the running backs have been given more opportunities to make plays because the blocking is better. The running game matured a little bit.
I kind of disagree with the take. I mean, in only to
Who's
the
take?
Not yours. I agree with your take. I disagree with the take that they've improved. Markedly. I think they've been good all year. I agree with Brian. I think perhaps the opportunities have been somewhat better. I mean, the one place this team has been really good all year, except for the fumbles, has been running back.
I mean, I agree with that on Haskins.
Yeah
I think that they were leaving some things on the field early in the season that they aren't leaving on the field now.
It could be. Incidentally, it seemed like the running game went a lot better. Maybe Maryland was just beaten down when we got the ball out to the orbit guy twice in a row. And
it's not a coincidence, right? It happened against Illinois.
Twice they get the ball, I think, to Ronnie Bell twice in a row for about 20, 21 yards on those back-to-back plays. All of a sudden, the middle seems a lot softer.
The first one didn't get 20 yards, did it?
They got 5 or 6, and then they got 15 on the next one, I think 15 or 16. So, yeah, all of a sudden, the middle of the field seems a lot easier to, you know, and that's, I don't think, coincidence, right?
I didn't bring it up.
Oh, okay.
I didn't say a word about it. You did.
Okay.
Not coincidence. Got a threat in the perimeter. Speed and space. Someone said that.
Speed and space, right. Someone said it.
Yeah, so.
Yeah, I mean, the running game is definitely evolving. I mean, 56 success rate in this game. They're up to 43rd. When I look at rushing success rate adjusted for schedule, I'm pretty sure they were in the hundreds at one point this season.
So yeah, they would have been.
Yeah, I mean, I think after the Wisconsin game, for sure.
Well,
they
ran for 3 yards a carry against Rutgers.
Right.
So, yeah, there's
because the passing game was working there, but.
Well, there's been a sea change in approach and the way things fit together that started with second straight year. Michigan has decided that they need to have a pretty different run game halfway through the season. Hopefully next year.
It'll start that way.
They'll start that way and be like, okay, let's keep doing the things that worked.
Well, maybe some continuity with offensive coaches.
I think continuity will help because, you know, I've been looking more and more and, you know, I see much of what we're seeing. We're watching some of the plays, like even this trap play. I see Alabama runs all this stuff. Mm-hmm. So it's like, I think part of it is learning your personnel and seeing what they can do based on your experience on the fly. And so now I think he's kind of settled in. As far as the run game is concerned, and we'll see if they can keep graduating the passing. I agree with the Nico shots.
I mean, if you look at the defensive coaching staff, you've had Brown here for 4 years. You've had Partridge here the whole time. You've had Zornich here until last year. That's a core of guys that you have had around who can iterate the defense. And we've seen a lot different defense this year. On the offensive side of the ball, first-year coordinator, first-year quarterback coach, Sharon Moore is in his second year.
Yeah.
Warner's in his second year. The only guy who's been around is Jay Harbaugh. And I don't think Jay Harbaugh is, like, giving people advice about, like, what tactics we're going to use.
So
right?
there's balance. Go ahead, Ed.
Oh, I mean, I completely hear you, Brian. And I agree with you. Like, I feel like that has been an issue. But the counter issue is, you know, no one liked Pep Hamilton, and we wanted to modernize the offense, too.
So I'm not saying that it was a mistake to do this. I'm just saying that, you know, if you look at what is going on, it's not even like Gattis has a guy he can rely on to be like, all right, so what's it been like around here? Who's the guy?
Well,
what can we do?
Like, well, but to your point, Warner's been around, and like he knows what worked last year in the running game.
This is his second year. I mean,
it's
like
second year. Yeah.
There's levels, right? Like,
yeah.
So I feel like having some offensive stability in the coaching staff this offseason is very important.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I mean, Gattis should be the OC next year, and this is important. I mean, there's a fine line. There's a line between a school, say, just rearranging the deck chairs on the Titanic.
Michigan State.
and a team that's, like, in such continual turmoil that you end up not having any sort of consistency or continuity or history in terms of what you've done. And so I think it would be good if Michigan stays stable this year on for certain on the offensive side.
Yeah, and then on the line.
We got to get to break. I'll let you pick up on the other side, Ed.
Welcome back to the Michigan Insider, Sports Talk 1050 WTK. The ticket online at WTK.com. It's time for more of the MGoBlog Roundtable brought to you by Homeshore Lending. If you're looking for a mortgage and you're a Michigan fan, there's only one place to go, Homeshore Lending. Homeshore Lending is a local company, and you'll work directly with the owner, Matt Demarest.
So, fellas, we are back here inside the MDN studio. Sam Webb, Brian Cook from MGoBlog. What's your T-shirt today, Brian? What is it? Western Kentucky?
Go Tops, Western Kentucky.
Okay. No, so, man, these are just...
I have an aunt who's a professor at Western Kentucky.
So I've seen Western Kentucky, Wayne State.
Wayne State, yeah.
U of D.
Tons of Oklahoma State.
Not as good as this shirt, though.
That's true. He has
a kissing Brian Cook face.
That's a screaming, screaming Brian Cook.
You know that Ed is such a fan of yours?
Yes,
he wanted to wear... a T-shirt with your face on it.
I've wanted this thing for years, man.
He was going to be with you.
I can't even.
He hangs around. He's like already our third child.
He's already stenciled on "Free the Indy 500" underneath.
I have to be like, all right, Ed, come on up. Let's get some dinner.
So, you know, I want to get some basketball in here, guys.
Yeah,
so
sure,
I mean, they get up 30 points. The next thing you know, they're up 4. And I certainly have seen a wide range of reactions to that. Anywhere from, no big deal, to, oh, my God, this team is going to be terrible this year. They won't make the tournament. Where do you fall?
Well, so I fall in between. You know, you do see this in a lot of games where a team gets up 30 and then the team that's up 30 starts gambling steals and taking hero ball shots. And I thought there was definitely an element of that in comeback. Now, once they get down to 22, you'd hope that kind of gets corrected. But like part of it is just something that we see in every game. We call it KenPom. We get very frustrated about it. But our KenPom ran good.
I thought about you when X was put back in at the end of the half with 2 fouls. I was like, oh, Brian Cook must just be.
Well, I mean.
Hell yeah, man.
I mean, with one possession where
still,
you got the ball.
But he did it, though.
Yeah, and then they turned the ball over.
But well, he did it. That's my point.
So I think part of it is just the fact that X had probably his worst game in a long time.
Yeah.
Yep.
If that is the X we get this year, okay, we're in trouble. But yeah.
Reason to think that.
Yeah, no reason to believe that. You know, Michigan.
We got to give Craig some credit because he's the one that came in here and said Eli Brooks is the starting two. And
Eli Brooks is the starting two for now.
Yeah. Had a heck of a game.
I think for
His shot looked different.
If he can shoot confidently, he's a good defender. He can give you a little secondary ball handling. You know, I think he'll be at least a good bench player.
I think your two is going to be Franz Wagner.
Yeah,
that's what I think.
Right, but I think for now it looks like they're going to play Brooks, DeJulius, and Simpson together. That's the lineup they had at the end of the game.
That lineup didn't work though. So, yeah. I think what we saw from Johns and Castleton, I think those guys have to split them. Like that Ivory Towers lineup where they had Teske and Castleton on at the same time. That was a good lineup.
I think so too.
What lineup did you think was good?
Ivory Towers.
Castleton. I didn't say I agree with the name, but I agree with Castleton and Teske on the court at the same time.
Prowess here, Brian?
Ivory Towers. We're gonna make fetch happen, guys.
Oh my goodness.
That's the next MGO shirt right there.
But look, I think it was I think this. About Eli Brooks. I like that his confidence has improved. I think he's more sure of himself on the court. I think he is a secondary ball handler and a spot-up shooter. And the shots that he got in this game, and the shots they got in the first half for the most part, are not the kind of looks that they're going to get routinely. I mean, part of it was, what are you doing defensively? I mean, you get a wide-open three off of an inbound play. To livers, you get a wide open three in transition. There were several wide open threes for Eli Brooks in the game, but they, you know, in the second half.
But he wasn't taking those last year.
Yeah, I know. That's what I said. I mean, he is playing more confident. But you saw as we got into the second half of the game, and those shots, those looks started to be contested. They started to run him off the 3-point line a bit.
Nobody here is saying that he's gonna put Franz Wagner on the bench.
I'm just saying that about the team as a whole. This is not
shaking my head.
This is not a squad that has you know, guys on the perimeter that are going to, you know, are going to score over people a lot. They got to play inside out, in my opinion. Look,
well, I mean, the other thing that the big guys at the four give you is they give you a margin for error when, you know, X is in the paint as a throw a pass. Like, there was one really good gathering and finish from Castleton where I thought that was a turnover. And, oh, it's fine because Castleton's 6'11 and has super long arms. So, you know, he's a guy who I think is going to be able to survive defensively at the four. He's obviously got to give backup minutes at the five, so he's limited in the amount of minutes that he can get there. But, you know, what we saw from Johns, he can 2 or 3 threes. He was active on the offensive rebounding. Like, people talk about his confidence, and, like, I don't need him to be a 30% usage guy. He just needs to be there.
Yeah, I would, to your point, one of those guys would be my four, and I'd have Livers at the three.
Yeah.
That would be my lineup. I'm playing Franz Wagner at the two. That is your best line. Why are you shaking your head, Craig?
Because the conversation to me seems, at best, well premature.
Why?
Because we don't know what Franz Wagner can do. We haven't seen him in one single minute of play. We haven't seen him in an exhibition game.
I think Franz is a more capable one-on-one player. Not having seen him play a college game is a more capable one-on-one player than Eli Brooks.
I mean, he was playing in EuroLeague.
I say that confidently.
I watched a lot of his EuroLeague tape, and I'm not so sure. Now, you know, what I did see of Franz live is that he does, unlike his brother, he does have very good feet, and he was moving his feet very well in an early practice that I saw.
Most got pretty good feet for a 6'11 guy.
Not exactly on defense. Sure.
He's a terrible defender.
And he's not. Yeah. I mean, he can put the ball on the floor for a few bounces and still score. He can score over people. If you move him off his spot, he can still shoot it.
I mean, he's 6'9".
What did Beilein always say about a player?
Beilein's not here anymore.
What he said was true. You are who you can guard. Can Franz play the two and guard a two?
Yes.
Yes.
I hope so. But I'll believe it when I see it. Even if
you feel his defensive ability, and I'm relying a lot on Derek. Derek was like, man, this dude can guard 1 through 3, no problem.
I know he played with him in Germany.
But even if we set that aside and say that he has some deficiency, you know, defensively, hypothetically, I still think he brings so much more to the table offensively that I'll take it.
Well,
I'll deal with the deficit because I think he is so much better offensively. Then the gap between him and Eli Brooks would be defensive.
No, look, Eli Brooks is going to be the two, and he's going to be the two most of the year.
All right.
And wait a minute.
All right.
And where Franz is going to play, because where...
Can we please move on from this?
No, Craig Ross just openly defied you, Brian Cook.
I think Franz is going to be better off in the front court at a three, and Livers is better at the four anyway.
In an ideal world.
I'm telling you that's what it's going to look like by the middle of the season, because that's, and if I'm wrong, I'm wrong. But we'll see. Because I think that's the team that makes the most sense here. I'm not sure that Castleton and Teske can play together. I'm not sure that
they
makes sense.
They just did.
I didn't like it. And
you did it?
No. And
I thought they look good together.
And I think Johns is better at the four.
Takes.
And so
you need 40 minutes at the four.
I know.
So you need 40 minutes at the three, and Livers is only going to be out there for 35 of those minutes.
That's probably right.
You're going to have to play Franz at the three sometimes. That's true. So that's where Brooks's minutes come from. It's probably been 20-20. At best.
Yeah. You know,
so like,
with this particular team, my guess is you're going to be better off with a 6-person team.
I mean, I don't
know. Oh, jeez. No. Let's get to it.
I don't ever want to hear this again.
You knew it was coming. And we are back, folks, here on the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050 WTKA online at WTKA.com. How many minutes do we have left on this?
Man, Craig is saying stuff that's making me agree with Brian. this is out there, man. Craig Ross in the house.
Yeah, it is. I mean, the season underway. I mean, everyone has Michigan State winning this thing by a few games.
Did you see the Kentucky game?
I did.
Man,
I
know that was
Tillman in there. Man, what did you say?
They look terrible without Tillman in there.
That's not surprising. 10 minutes.
Yeah, preseason number one was just, have you looked at this roster? Yeah, Cassius Winston is real good.
I think Tillman's real good.
Tillman, they got a couple other pieces, but like their backup point guard is a literal Keebler elf, a figurative Keebler elf.
Yeah,
do we think he's going to be that all year? I wonder.
He
makes delicious cookies.
I don't think Winston's going to be off the court very much.
He's only off the court and he's getting into foul trouble.
Yeah. And otherwise, I think he's playing. And I think Michigan State's really good. I think they have a chance to win the national championship. I mean, you saw Kentucky's a very talented team. Lots of good athletes.
I mean, early
that dude.
Early getting clunked by early season Kentucky. They're all
they haven't even got lathered up yet.
Every year, they're like, this Kentucky team's kind of bad. And then they're an 8 seed.
And Mac, this dude comes in getting huge buckets. It was when Maxie scored those. When he made his shots. I mean, that three that he hit at the end.
Yeah, I mean,
you're basically playing an AAU team at the end. You can't beat an AAU team. It's a real good AAU team. But they, like, early season Kentucky is not as intimidating as they're going to be. I feel like they're all right, but they're way overhyped.
You think so? I think they're the best team in the Big Ten.
They are. I can't disagree with that.
But like, you can't put them on a tier with A-listers.
I disagree. I think they're on the tier with the A-list title contenders. I think Kentucky, Louisville, Michigan State are probably the most likely national champions this year. Take those three, one of them.
Can we get back to the Michigan game real quick?
Go ahead.
77 possessions estimated from the box score. Let's throw out five because of fouling at the end. And 17 turnovers.
Yeah, that's terrible.
So almost a quarter of possessions ended in turnovers. You could hear John Beilein's groans when you were watching the game. So just one game, but something you got to look at moving forward.
Well, I think Brian nailed it earlier when he said, you know, part of it you can attribute to they just got lax with being up so many points. At the same time, though, I think with the change in style, the faster pace, that some more turnovers are going to come with that, especially as they're learning the process. But they need to limit the careless ones, the ones that are totally avoidable because you're just doing things that you're doing playground stuff. Yeah. You know, you can cut those out, but there are going to be more turnovers with this change in style that they're trying to
implement. Well, they're executing a lot of different actions. So a lot of the stuff that Beilein used to run is no longer at Michigan. There's going to be a transfer. So like they're running a lot of sets that you can tell they're not super familiar with yet. So I feel like there's a good chance that as we go along
I want to see them do what they did in the first half of that game, which was be committed to the post. I mean, absolutely. And the best example of this, and I pointed it out right after the game. So Appalachian State goes zone, so Michigan's going to chuck it, right? No, they worked the post anyway. You had John Teske.
And John did a good job of feeding it out.
To the top. He kicks it out. Yeah. He runs weak side. They reverse the ball, get it right back to him. And then he has to go to a secondary move to score the bucket. That's what this team needs to do. They got to work inside out in order to get some of the guys that are on the perimeter that are standstill shooters to get those guys the kind of looks they need to be successful.
Although we're not going to see a whole lot of that this year. We're not going to see a whole lot of 2-3, 3-2 zone. I don't expect.
Teams are going to
zone us some?
Yeah.
In the Big Ten?
To say, hey, you know what? Mm. All you could do is give it to these guys in the paint. These guys on the perimeter aren't going to beat us, and we'll see.
Well, one of the things that I liked is that when they did go to zone, that was the most decisive passing we've seen from a Michigan team against zone.
It was.
And I mean, I love John Beilein. His teams were ugly to watch against zone. They just tossed the ball around the perimeter. It wouldn't go inside at all. It was ugly. And in this game, Michigan's whipping it from side to side, and then they go through the middle to get
good shots.
A reaction from someone, and then they're getting open. Mm-hmm. So that's got to be Phil Martelli, because I know that Juwan hasn't spent the last 30 years like dealing with zones. So
I agree with that. That was a plus in the game. The worst thing that happens to an offense or a team is turning the ball over. There's nothing worse because a turnover often implies a good shot at the other end. Aside from costing you the possession, and so that's the number one place for this team.
But we've gotten used to Beilein putting a top 10 turnover rate in the nation. I don't think we're seeing that this year. Hopefully, it's respectable.
Let's give it more than one game.
Yeah, I agree.
Of course. Right. All right.